the seismic Supreme Court ruling on presidential immunity that could shape America for years to come.
There is a principle that nobody is above the law, and it has always been understood that the president himself has to abide by the law. This opinion, not only does it grant this immunity, but it grants the immunity in some really sweeping ways, I think go far beyond anything anybody could have assumed.
Plus, thousands of Palestinians displaced multiple times already are ordered to relocate once again.
The latest order is a sign that Hamas has managed to regroup, and we could soon see Israeli forces moving back into Khan Yunis and a resumption of heavy fighting.
And the European leader with the closest ties to Russia meets with Ukraine's president in a rare visit to Kyiv. Today is July 2nd, and this is VOA's Flashpoint Global Crises. Good evening, I'm Lori London. Israeli forces bombarded several areas of southern Gaza Tuesday, and thousands of Palestinians fled their homes in what could be part of a final push of Israel's intensive military operations in 9 months of war. Associated Press correspondent Yosef Fetterman reports.
The Israeli military has ordered a mass evacuation from a large part of the southern Gaza city of Khan Yunis. This isn't the first time we've seen an evacuation order like this. Israel spent several months inside Khan Yunis battling Hamas before withdrawing earlier this year. The latest order is a sign that Hamas has managed to regroup, and we could soon see Israeli forces moving back into Khan Yunis and a resumption of heavy fighting.
AP correspondent Yosef Fetterman. Gaza's European hospital in Khan Yunis is virtually empty, with staff and patients fleeing after the Israeli army's orders for residents in the surrounding areas to evacuate. UNRWA spokesperson Louise Waterridge.
UNRWA estimates that around 250,000 people have been impacted by these orders. Of course, as usual, we expect these numbers to grow. But, you know, for us, this is it's another devastating blow to the humanitarian response here. It's another devastating blow for the people and the families on the ground. It seems that they are forcibly being displaced again and again. You know, making these decisions is now impossible.
Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken affirmed Monday that President Joe Biden's proposal to end the Israel-Hamas conflict is achievable and urged Hamas to accept it. Blinken also underlined the importance of post-war plans to rebuild Gaza and prevent a security vacuum in the territory. VOA's Veronica Balteras-Inglesias reports.
As Israeli troops continue deepening their incursions in Gaza in search of militants, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced Monday that Hamas's military capabilities have almost been eliminated.
We are advancing to the end of the phase of eliminating the terrorist army of Hamas, and there will be a continuation to strike its remnants.
The announcement was made as U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, in an interview at the Brookings Institution in Washington, called on Hamas's leadership to accept a phased peace proposal currently on the table.
I think the proposal that President Biden put forward is achievable. And it would be the best way forward, the quickest way to end the conflict in Gaza, to stop the violence, to massively surge assistance, to get everyone home, including American hostages.
As the secretary spoke, the voices of protesters gathered outside the Brookings Institution could also be heard. Blinken, who didn't acknowledge them, stressed that the Israel-Hamas conflict cannot end with a vacuum in Gaza.
It has to end in a way that makes sure that there are clear, coherent, achievable plans for Gaza's governance, for its security, and of course, to start to help people to rebuild their lives that have been so decimated and destroyed.
One of the Palestinians whose life has radically changed and wants accountability is Dr. Mohamed Abu Selmeya. The director of Al-Shifa Hospital was released early Monday after being in Israeli custody since November. He says prisoners were subjected to severe torture and his little finger was broken. He was repeatedly hit on the head until he bled. He says there was almost daily torture in Israeli prisons.
We were subjected to severe torture. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello to VOA Africa, and thank you for joining us. I'm Dimiake Mwakalielia, and here's what's coming up.
I think the countries are also claiming that they've come of age, and they are actually arguing that it's not about putting the boot on the ground. Maybe they need the other soft negotiation or soft partnership that probably provides capacity building, supply of armaments and weapons.
That was Oluwole Ojawale in Dakar for South Africa's Institute for Security Studies, saying Francophone Africans are moving toward different strategies to fight extremist groups and shifting away from France's emphasis on fighting fire with fire. Also, John Mahama was sworn in today as Ghana's president for the second time, and Seychelles off the east coast of Africa has become the unlikely setting of a great power rivalry. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Fears are growing in the Maghreb countries about the possible release of prisoners from the region in Syria. Since the fall of Bashar al-Assad's government in Syria, thousands of prisoners have been released from the country's prisons. That has raised concerns that some of those freed might be militant extremists from Maghreb countries. Journalist Noura Hafayed has more.
Many Tunisians are concerned about the possibility of the return of Islamic State extremists from Tunisia who were in jail in Syria before the overthrow of the Assad government. Tunisian President Kais Saied has extended the state of emergency in the country for a month until January 30th. The state of emergency has been in effect in Tunisia since a terrorist bombing that targeted a presidential security bus on November 24th, 2015. There are no accurate figures yet on the number of Tunisian prisoners in Syrian prisons, but reports indicate that hundreds have gone to Syria since the Arab Spring protests in 2011. Many are suspected of joining extremist terrorist organizations, including the Islamic State or ISIS. Ashraf Athulfi is a political analyst expert in North Africa affairs, security files, and terrorism issues. He is also the former spokesman for Libya's Government of National Accord.
Obviously, they have to meet trial and kept in jail. Now, what I believe that some underage and very young, they've been through brainwash and they are victims of poverty and marginalization in the society. The young people of this crowd should be rehabilitated and giving them a second chance with scrutiny and monitoring of their behavior, hoping till they get rehabilitated citizens again.
The MENA Research Center in Austria, among other organizations, has reported that Tunisian government has cracked down on militant groups after several attacks in the country over the previous decade. Munzer Thabit is a Tunisian political analyst.
بالطبع هذا أمر موكول لأجهزة الاستخبارات بالطبع يحتاج أيضا إلى ترخيص.
He says, of course, this is left to the intelligence services. It also requires a judicial license. No citizen can be monitored without a judicial license. Of course, in relation to the issue, the public prosecution in coordination with the intelligence services will be required to follow up and may resort to house arrest for some elements. In the past, Tunisia's interior ministry told parliament that an estimated 2,900 Tunisian extremists were thought to be in conflict zones in the region, including in Libya and Iraq. The international group Human Rights Watch says many of them may be the wives and children of fighters. For VOA Africa, I am Noura Hafayed in Tunis.
John Mahama was sworn in today as Ghana's president for the second time as the country faces its worst economic crisis in a generation. Mahama, the opposition leader who started his political career as the communications minister, won the presidential election held late last year. He ran on the pledge to reset the economy and tackle corruption and unemployment. He promised to reset the country on various fronts during a campaign that prioritized the economy and largely appealed to young Ghanaians who saw the vote as a way out of the country's economic crisis. Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara last week announced that French forces will withdraw this month from the West African nation. Ivory Coast joins a growing list of countries, including the Sahelian states of Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, and Senegal, who've severed military ties with their former colonial ruler. Darren Taylor reports.
Security analysts tell VOA the militaries of Ivory Coast and Senegal have the capabilities to counter extremist groups linked to Islamic State. But they're concerned about the countries of the Sahel, where local armies and Russian fighters have suffered significant losses since French troops withdrew. Leonard Mboulenziege, an analyst at Africa Risk Consulting in South Africa, says the exit of the French military from Francophone Africa is the strongest signal yet that it wants total independence from the former colonial power.
France has a very, very special post-colonial relationship on the continent, which no other former colonial power has. And the reason is because France understands that its position as a global power has been largely derived because of its heavy involvement in Francophone Africa. And a major reason behind this are the security agreements. As I said, you have the Accord de Défense, which allows France to intervene at the request of African countries when they're in trouble, but also the ability to implant military bases across these countries. And a lot of these agreements are very, very uneven. And in many instances, these countries try to carry out operations, military operations, but then France says they're not allowed to. I mean, even in Mali, for example, the Malian government wanted to negotiate with the violent extremist groups, and then France has been opposed to it.
Olawole Ojewale in Dakar for South Africa's Institute for Security Studies says Francophone Africans don't want to depend on France for development and security. He adds that French troops have been asked to leave because that's what most citizens want. Ojewale says new political players, like the military governments in the Sahel, need legitimacy, and the expulsion of French troops is supposed to be an indication of how strong they are. Actually, says the analyst, most new administrations are politically weak, with no plans to develop their countries. Ojewale says the withdrawal of French soldiers and their military technology does create what he refers to as security gaps. But, he adds, the nature of counter-terrorism operations is changing as governments realize fighting fire with fire isn't always the right strategy.
I think the countries are also claiming that they've come of age, and they are actually arguing that it's not about putting the boot on the ground. Maybe they need the other soft negotiation or soft partnership that probably provides capacity building, supply of armaments and weapons that these countries are actually going to use to engage in their counter-terrorism effort.
Ojewale says the exit of French troops is also about shifting geopolitics and Francophone Africa's desire for new alliances.
We also see some middle powers coming into play and even established powers. Russia is about the one supplanting France in some of these countries. China is also present on ground. And we are seeing a bit of United Arab Emirates. We are seeing Qatar. We are also seeing Turkey playing a very prominent role within these countries that we're talking about. So it's about moving away from unipolar bilateral arrangement in terms of partnership to a multipolar arrangement in which these countries have liberty to choose who is going to be their partners.
So he says the void left by the exit of French soldiers could soon be filled by soldiers from other powers. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. I'm your host, Ndimiake Mwakalyelye, in Washington. We'll be right back. The small island nation of the Seychelles off the east coast of Africa has become the unlikely setting of a great power rivalry. China has been making diplomatic inroads for years, while the U.S. has only recently returned to the strategic Indian Ocean archipelago. Kate Bartlett traveled to the island of Mahé in the Seychelles for more on what China and the U.S. are doing to win the hearts of the residents there.
The islands of Seychelles are not only picture-perfect for honeymooners, they've also long attracted global superpowers.
We do notice that there are various powers, various countries, wanting to, as you say, woo us. Seychelles has made the decision that there will be, that will never be, a military base on its territory, a foreign military base.
The archipelago's strategic position in the Indian Ocean, east of Africa, and south of the Gulf states has been of interest to countries such as the US, India, and China from the past to the present day. In 1963, during the Cold War, the US built a tracking station on the main island of Mahé to monitor Russian satellites. 73-year-old island resident Paul Chow remembers the Americans when they were stationed on the island.
I was the head of the basketball, local island basketball team, and we used to play against the technicians at the tracking station.
Then, in the 90s, several years after the collapse of the Soviet Union, the U.S. closed its embassy here and shut down the tracking station a month later. Almost three decades later, at a time when U.S.-China competition is heating up, Washington, once again, has set its eyes on Seychelles.
The reopening of the embassy underscores the importance that the United States places on the partnership that we have with Seychelles.
The Chinese embassy in Mahé declined a request for an interview. But in the years of Washington's absence, China has been making diplomatic gains in Seychelles. It sent doctors and built hospitals, affordable housing, the parliament, and the courts, all for free. China also gifted the state television company a new building.
The difference is that China's support to Seychelles is tangible. You can see them. You don't see the support that the U.S. provides us.
Rather than building buildings, we're building capacity. And wherever we can help to provide input and expertise, whether it is on drug trafficking or the legal system or police force, we're happy to do that. And that's where we see really making an investment. You're planting seeds for the future. It's again, not the same thing as a building, but we believe that it's an even more important contribution to make.
But that may not be enough to capture the hearts of some residents here.
China helps the Seychelles a lot. So people generally have a very positive view of China. But whereas maybe the U.S., they left back in the 90s. So we don't really get in touch with Americans that much.
While some residents fear their country is being used as a pawn in the geopolitical power play, President Wavell Ramkalawan's position is clear.
Seychelles is not part of this. We will receive Chinese warships in port, Indian warships, European warships, U.S. warships, because we are friends with everyone.
With two-thirds of the world's oil shipments passing through, the Indian Ocean is a key waterway, which keeps Seychelles on the map for geopolitical rivals such as China and the U.S. as they compete for influence here. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Mahé, Seychelles.
Part of Guinea's capital, Conakry, were on lockdown today as civil society and opposition groups protested the ruling military government's missed deadline to launch a return to democracy. Military leader Colonel Mamadi Doumbouya, who took power in 2021, said a decree for a constitutional referendum will be signed to launch the democratic process, but he did not commit to a date. The Associated Press reports activists and opposition groups condemned the announcement as a ploy to prolong military rule. The U.S. State Department urged the military leaders to commit to concrete steps for a constitutional referendum and democratic elections and to involve civil society groups and political parties in the process. On Monday, the opposition asked Guineans to stay indoors as a form of protest and accused the military of holding Guinea hostage. They said one man was fatally shot and hundreds of mostly young people have been arrested in the latest protest. On the Middle East, U.S. President-elect Donald Trump has chosen as advisors two businessmen with whom he shares close personal ties. VOA's Michael Lippin reports.
Donald Trump chose longtime friend Stephen Witkoff as his new special envoy to the Middle East. The New York real estate investor campaigned regularly for Trump's re-election. That close relationship will help Witkoff in the region, says national security analyst Allison McManus.
So as Witkoff does need to be traveling, to be meeting with foreign counterparts, heads of state, you know, ministerial level, he will be able to bring that kind of clout, let's say, with him, that he's somebody speaking on behalf of the president who, you know, will have that sort of authority in those settings.
In Qatar last May, Witkoff praised the Gulf state for diversifying its economic growth through government and private sector collaboration.
And I sense it in Qatar. I think that they obviously had an economy that was much more geared towards petrochemical and natural gas and things of that sort, and they're expanding. Tourism is up. The hotels here are magnificent. Mm. Who wouldn't come back to this region?
Experts note Witkoff may have to divest from some real estate deals with Gulf states to comply with U.S. laws against conflicts of interest. Again, here's Allison McManus.
It's absolutely something that is a great concern as we see some of these particularly business community figures in roles where they could both personally enrich themselves in negotiating terms that may be more favorable to certain countries like the Gulf countries, and also what that might mean in terms of their prioritization, again, of interests.
Massad Boulos will serve as Trump's senior advisor on Arab and Middle Eastern affairs. He is the father-in-law of the president-elect's daughter, Tiffany. The Lebanese-American businessman also campaigned for Trump's re-election, mobilizing Arab-American voters in the Midwestern swing state of Michigan. Boulos is a chief executive of SCOA Nigeria, a company selling trucks and heavy machinery in the West African nation. He was born to a minority Christian family in the northern Lebanese village of Kfar Aka, where his father served as mayor. Last October, Boulos said conflict in the region has kept him from returning to Lebanon. Major challenges await Trump's new Mideast team. They include Israel's ongoing conflicts with Iranian proxies in Gaza and Yemen, Iran's expanding nuclear program, Syria's chaotic emergence from dictatorial rule, and an elusive deal to normalize relations between Israel and Saudi Arabia. Michael Lippin, VOA News, Washington.
Congolese authorities say 172 inmates on death row were flown from the capital to a high-security prison where they will be executed. Justice Minister Constant Mutamba said 70 convicts were transported Sunday, adding to 102 who have already been sent to a Genga prison in Mongala province. According to the Associated Press, he said the men have been convicted of armed robbery and are locally known as urban bandits. He did not say when the executions would take place. Some have welcomed the measure as a means of restoring order and security, while others are concerned about the risks of abuse and human rights violations. Zimbabwe's government says it is working with the International Atomic Energy Agency and Russia, as well as some Russian investors, to establish nuclear energy as part of efforts to end power shortages that have resulted in some parts of the country going for long hours without electricity. The government also says it wants to increase use of wind and solar energy as recurring droughts are seriously reducing hydropower generation. Columbus Mavunga in Harare files this report.
Edgar Moyo, Minister of Energy and Power Development in Zimbabwe, told journalists the government was working to establish nuclear power as part of efforts to end power shortages.
We would like to develop nuclear energy sources in the country through small modular reactors. We are cooperating, so I just the Russia that deal with nuclear power. We are also cooperating very closely with the International Atomic Energy Agency, wherein our expression of interest is ready to be communicated with them, and they have indicated their willingness to take us through the paces until we get there.
Joseph Sigu, the director of research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington, says establishing nuclear power is expensive and complex. He says that's why countries like South Africa and Egypt have sought Russia's assistance.
Most economists would argue that those deals cost far more than are warranted for the benefits that they would provide to their economies and to their societies. And so there's a worry that these huge infrastructural projects become a source of corruption, both in the country where it is being built, but also vis-a-vis the state-owned enterprises that the Russians provide to build the plant. In the end, it becomes the public in the country is building the plant that would be responsible for paying off these costs.
Zimbabwe says its goal is to have 4,000 megawatts of power capacity by 2035 and end years of power cuts, which can sometimes last up to 18 hours per day. Sigu says that Zimbabwe's power needs do not warrant a traditional large-scale nuclear reactor and suggests that the government study the lasting impact and waste disposal.
It's also important to consider your partner. Nuclear power plant's going to be a long-term operation, lasting for decades. And so you're going to want to have a partner who's reliable, trustworthy, honest, that you can maintain a mutually beneficial relationship with. And so transparency is critical. And so other considerations are waste disposal. This has always been a concern with nuclear energy. What do you do with the waste, which require some 10,000 years for the radioactive elements to decay and not pose a health risk to society? And, you know, lastly, I would highlight the heightened security risk that are involved with nuclear power.
Zimbabwe's current capacity for power generation is about 2,600 megawatts, according to the government. Actual daily generation is roughly half of that. The government hopes that nuclear energy and more renewable energy sources can provide more consistent power. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Mauritius has issued an arrest order for former finance minister Raganaidan Padayachi as part of a probe into alleged embezzlement. The Reuters news agency says the announcement was issued in a police notice in newspapers today, days after former central bank governor Havesh Sugolam was arrested. Sugolam was released on bail over the weekend after he was detained and charged with conspiracy to commit fraud. They were the first major moves by the government of Prime Minister Navin Arangulam, who has accused the previous administration of falsifying data for economic growth, the budget deficit, and the public debt for years. Padayachi did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Sigolam's lawyer declined to comment.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Dimyake Mokalielia here in Washington. For all the latest development on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Vandi, and our engineer, Justin Thwaite, thank you for choosing The Voice of America.